let honorable members know whom are they dealing with from your bench. You don't have to say everything because there'll be specific questions, especially your past, your education, anything you have done which has some relevance to what you want today to be a member of the board. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good afternoon, honorable members. I'm sure you all know my name is Mamuditi Mohlala. My background is I am an attorney. I'm legally qualified. But let me just go through three specific steps, speak to my qualifications, speak to my experience in the sector, and also speak to the reason why I applied for this particular position or was nominated and I accepted the nomination for the position. First of all, with regard to my qualification, I have a Bachelor of Arts in Law, and then I have a Bachelor of Laws, which is an LLB, and I have an LLM. And subsequent to getting my master's degree, I went forth and I got a qualification in utility regulation, and I have an mini MBA in telecommunications, which are all in relation to the sector that I'm applying to be part of. Now, with regard to my specific experience, I have been in the telecommunications and broadcasting sector before it became the ICT sector for a number of years. I believe that I am one of the people who were the first group to be trained by the Department of Communication to get into the sector. I was a newly qualified attorney. I got training under the late Minister Kasaburi. I got training under Andy Lengaba and under Lindolsho Pemafula, who were the DGs at the time. I got a vast experience even before I got formally into the sector. When I was a consultant, I did a lot of drafting of legislation. I was part of the Telkom IPO, which was the initial public offering, where Telkom became listed where Telkom became listed on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. I think it's now the Securities Exchange, when they were listed on the New York Stock Exchange. Thereafter, I was appointed as a counselor at ICASA. I spent 7 years at ICASA. I served almost two terms. I finished my first term and I left just before the end of my second term as a counselor at ICASA. In the course of the work that I did at ICASA, I did a lot of broadcasting and telecommunications work, although you will see that I spent a lot of time doing a lot of more telecommunications than broadcasting work. But what is critical, I believe, for this particular position is that I served on the technical committee, that dealt with spectrum allocation and spectrum planning within the sector. We also dealt with allocation of broadcasting spectrum. Thereafter, I was pension funds adjudicator. I won't spend too much time on that because that's not directly relevant to the position that I'm applying for. But subsequent to that, I then became DG of Communications, whereby I worked in the Department of Communications. You'll see from my CV, I dealt with a lot of policy work. I dealt with regulations, but specifically the entities that we're dealing with, among which was the SABC. And I believe during that time, there were financial challenges at the SABC, and we were able to actually help stabilize the SABC during the time that I was there as Director General, and I believe I've spoken to it in some detail in my CV. Subsequent to that, I obviously left the Department of Communication. I was Consumer Commissioner, but in the course of my work as Consumer Commissioner, it also touched on licenses by both telecommunication and broadcasting operators or ICT operators at the time, whereby I obviously looked into their license conditions and I was checking whether there's compliance with the Consumer Protection Act, and I found that there were many areas where I felt there was non-compliance with the Consumer Protection Act. I made proposals with regard to what amendments needed to be made, but unfortunately my term of office came to an end before we could finalize that specific exercise. But we were dealing with issues around drop calls and such other areas within those licenses which we felt were detrimental to consumers. Thereafter, I've gone back to my practice, and I was practicing as an attorney, and in the course of practicing as an attorney, I did do some work, but I only did work for the regulator, not specific industry players. I was doing work for ICASA, and I've written one article whereby there was an issue around the set-top boxes and the policy that was being taken by government in relation to set-top boxes. And I wrote an article on that because I felt that it was going contrary to what was the initial aspiration when the whole project was started. So in a nutshell, that's where we stand, and I just also want to indicate that a month ago I was appointed as CEO of the East State Agency Affairs Board, but I don't believe it would have any conflict with regard to the position that I'm applying for currently. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think you have such a tone, Honourable Members. Honourable Fandang.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Mohlala Molaodze. You are eminently qualified and have all the right experience for the SABC board. Just a couple of issues that I think need to be dealt with. Now, there's a perception that you're a troublemaker. So, at the Department of Communications with the then Minister Sipiwe Nyanda, you had a falling out, and President Zuma stepped in, and then you went to the National Consumer Commission. There you locked horns with Minister Derek Hanekom. So what I am trying to understand is, so there is this perception of very strong women, you know, being assumed to be arrogant, aggressive, whatever. So I don't want to make that assumption about you, that that was the situation. So what I'm trying to figure out is, was it because you are a difficult person to work with, or was it something else? The reason I ask this is that the SABC board needs people who are team players. You need to stick together when the going gets tough, when the political pressures apply. You need to be able to work with other people. So what I'm trying to ascertain is, are you a team player? And what do you have to say about your fallouts that you had with those two ministers? That's my first question. If you can just keep it brief, because I've got two others.
No, thank you very much. It's unfortunate that people would characterize me as a troublemaker. I do not consider myself to be a troublemaker. I actually consider myself to be a South African who is proud to be South African and wants to see what is best for this country. I consider myself to be a very principled person. And if I feel that a principle is not being espoused or protected, or if I feel that a principle is not being properly protected, I will obviously voice my opinions with regard to that. And obviously there would be instances where I have had instances in my career whereby there are certain individuals or ministers that have not fully agreed with regard to my views, and I believe that at the end of the day, irrespective of that, history has borne credence to the fact that the principles that I stood up for have now seen the light of day and have actually been accredited as the right way to deal with issues. And just a little point of correction, it was not Minister Hanekom, it was actually Minister Rob Davis who I was reporting to at the time. Now, just to go into the question around whether I'm a team player, I think, unfortunately, what makes news is the not-so-good things that come to the fore. But I've worked very effectively and very productively with other ministers. I worked with Minister Kasaburi, like I already indicated. I worked very well with Minister Trevor Manuel, because when I was a pension funds adjudicator, I reported to Minister Manuel. And subsequent to the unfortunate situation with Minister Rob Davis, I've also worked with other MECs, because I then worked in provincial government. I worked with MEC Mashadila, I worked with MEC Ndombi Mikwe, and I've also worked with others, and there's never been a problem.
Thank now, about your positions being with history, proving them correct. There was a time where you were in full support of an idea for a 1% tax of all South Africans to fund the SABC. The SABC board was against it. The Minister of Finance was against it. Do you still believe that South Africans should be charged 1% of their tax to fund the SABC?
I think that, before I answer that question, I think it needs to be put in context. At the time, there was a regulation there was a license condition that all operators in the telecommunication space were expected to contribute 1% of their revenue towards the Universal Service Agency. And that was obviously the context from which I was looking at it from. Because in a conversion environment, it wouldn't matter whether you have a telecommunications or a broadcasting license. So that it was in anticipation of that convergence that submission was actually made. Now, looking at the environment is at the SABC currently, I don't necessarily believe that that would still be the best way forward. I believe that there are other mechanisms that can be put in place and that can actually make the SABC workable and that can make the funding model more efficient in order to make sure that it can self-fund the way it's expected to.
My last question, and I have to ask this. So there was a report of an incident with a domestic worker where you alleged that the domestic worker had stolen from you. You got into a physical altercation with the domestic worker. Your husband, etc., slapped the domestic worker and then tried to pay her off to drop the charges that were laid against you. So this is what's in the public domain, okay? So what's your response to that? Did you get into a physical altercation with a domestic worker? Did your husband slap a female domestic worker? Did your husband try to pay off the domestic worker who laid charges after being physically assaulted?
Right. First issue. Yes, unfortunately there was a physical altercation with my domestic worker, but she assaulted me. My husband was not even there at that point in time. And I think there's a mix-up here. My husband at no point in time tried to pay off the domestic worker. I do not believe that was even in that article. The allegation was that he actually slapped her. And if...
Sorry, ma'am. Article, it says he tried to pay her off. I'm not making this, I'm not sucking it out of the air. And the newspaper article, it says your husband tried to pay her off.
I'll have to go back and read that newspaper article, but I don't remember that. I remember an allegation that he actually slapped her. He actually did not assault that domestic worker. She was actually at home with me, and she actually assaulted me. I laid a criminal charge against her. She laid a criminal charge against me. Then eventually she went and withdrew that criminal charge for whatever reasons best known to herself. But I know it's because she knew that that was factually incorrect and she wouldn't be able to prove it in a court of law. And had there been any factual accuracy to that, I would have expected her to take it to its natural conclusion. And the mere fact that she withdrew that that criminal charge indicates clearly that what I'm telling you is the actual truth. Because I actually even had bruises that reflected that she actually assaulted me. And if you were to see her physically, she is of a much bigger physical build than myself. And my husband was not there at the point in time when that occurred. I was alone at home.
Yeah. Thank you very much, ma'am. Honorable Tlapo, Kaba, and then Honorable Faskalwe. There were two hands at the back. Yes.
No, thanks, Chair. One way to me, Mam Dupi. Okay. Now, Eba Hantle, I think it's fair that any reports be authentic. We are happy of your response, but it's important to work with facts and authentic things, seeing the DSA. Look, man, my approach to questioning you will be that maybe you write this set of questions, then you respond lately. It is evident that you are introduced into communications and SABC issues, so thanks for having confidence in applying for this. But then, man, our people are unemployed and not able to pay TV licenses. Do you pay TV licenses? And what is the plan to really assist in ensuring that the entire community would pay TV license, because we need that income. And then on the digital migration, it's very important for the SABC. How would you contribute to its speedy implementation if appointed as the board member? Lastly, you would have had service to be working with different ministers. What is your view of ministers providing leadership in the entity of SABC? One example was the recent good leadership provided by the minister when we had problems around SABC. So what could be your add-on understanding for government to play its role on its entity in providing leadership. Thank you.
With regard to the last one, I think really the question is, in your view, what will be the best practice? Because it's something which arises all the time, where the other party will say, I have a political responsibility, but the executive, the official will say, I'm an accounting officer, so what, in your view, what's the best practice? That's basically what he's looking for.
Thank you very much, Chair. Okay. Firstly, with regard to the TV license, yes, I do pay my TV license. I think it would be very irresponsible for me not to, because I'm aware of the implications of not paying a TV license. Now, with regard to what should be the position going forward with respect to TV licenses, I fully agree that SABC needs to sharpen its tools with regard to collection of TV licenses. I believe the Act provides for inspectors that should go around and inspect and check that TV licenses are being paid, and I don't believe that mechanism is being used sufficiently, especially with regard to businesses, especially your hotels, your retailers where they sell TV licenses, to make sure that when people buy TV licenses, those TV licenses are not released without, I mean, those TV sets are not released before a TV license is actually paid for. In fact, on this very point, as I was coming here, I was also thinking specifically like the second-hand TV sets. You find that in a lot of cases, the monitoring is not as strict as it should be with brand-new TV sets, and I think that's an area that needs to be looked into to make sure that even if it's a second-hand TV set, there must be monitoring to make sure that before there is release of that TV set, there is a TV license that has been secured for that TV set. The other option I believe that needs to also be explored is whether or not, because obviously the cost of going and monitoring and doing inspections and checking whether people have TV licenses is a costly exercise in itself. Maybe we need to start exploring the prospect of getting a lifetime TV license. It may obviously have called for a higher amount, but that would obviously then deal with the fact that before you take that TV license out of that shop, you have paid for your lifetime TV license. And it will also ensure that there's less cost that is spent then following up with people to check whether or not their TV licenses are being paid, because the annual TV license causes some problems with regard to the collection after the TV set has actually left the shop floor. So maybe we need to start thinking about some once-off payments with regard to TV licenses and make sure that you collect the maximum revenue at that point of sales on the once-off. The other aspect that I believe, just dealing with this issue around making sure that there's better revenue collection from an SABC point of view, because revenue and income for the SABC has always been a thorn in the side of the SABC since about 2007, and we're still sitting with these kinds of problems. I think it's important that maybe we start looking, and I know that this is something that was said by the current SABC board chairperson, and it is something that's somewhat controversial. But I think we need to go back and look at the must carry regulations. I believe that most South Africans watch SABC through the DSTV platform. In fact, I hardly think there's any South African that still watches SABC through any other platform other than the DSTV platform. Now, when you think of the numbers, because I was reading the annual report, and then you look at the numbers, we've got 70 to 80 million people who are actually on those platforms watching SABC 1, 2, and 3. Now, if the must carry regulations were to be revised and some consideration be put towards actually pricing that content, so that if that content is put on a DSTV platform, they must pay for that content the same way they'll pay for BBC content, the same way they pay for CNN, and they pay for Discovery content. So I think that needs to be looked at quite closely, because it could have the potential to unlock a substantial amount of revenue. Because right now all SABC is getting is really the advertising revenue. So I think that needs to be looked at quite closely. And I believe when I was at ICASA, it was an issue that was debated. But I think if I was to be given the opportunity to sit on this board, I believe that that would be a critical value add that I'd be able to work on almost immediately. Because with the regulator, you need to obviously have discussions. And having worked at the regulator and been in the industry as long as I have, I actually think I know three quarters of the ICASA Council and would be able to have some discussions with them in order to see whether this cannot be made a reality. So that's one issue that I just thought I might deal with at that point. Issue of digital migration, critical, critical, critical. It's long overdue. Many deadlines have been missed, and I believe it is what is needed to put us in the new age. And in fact, if we do not get into the digital migration age, there's a new age that's now coming to the fore, your fourth industrial revolution, and we haven't even managed to get into the digital space. Because as I've been reading, I've actually realized that the competitor for the SABC commercial service was your multi-choice, but it's now even moved from multi-choice. You've got your Netflixes of this world where you get videos on demand, etc., etc., and we're actually going to end up losing this race. But before we even get to that stage, I agree we need to get onto a digital platform, because a digital platform helps to release a spectrum so that you can have more channels, and most importantly, we start to develop content. And I believe that SABC needs to start competing at the level of content. And I'll tell you why. If you have content, you can then not only look at the South African market, you can look at the continent, you can look at the diaspora, you can look at African American, you can even use that to take advantage of BRICS. Because I'm sure you know Brazil and India. They have really produced a lot of content and they've sold it to many different countries. But I think there needs to be some reciprocity, especially from the context of Brazil. They need to also start buying our content, and we get voiceovers, and we sell it, and we get income in US dollars. So I think those kinds of things need to be really looked at quite closely. So the movement towards towards digital platforms cannot be done gradually as has been suggested. I think we need to make a forceful effort to make sure that we get onto those digital platforms and start procuring content. I just also want to also indicate one thing, that with content, you can also look at other markets in Africa, specifically because there's a view that the only content that you can sell would be the content that is provided in English. I actually think that is a very limited view of looking at where markets for content. There are other countries in Africa that share common languages with South Africa, and I think we need to look at those countries. Obviously, Zimbabwe is not in the strongest economic state, but you do have Lebele speakers where we can sell Zulu content. But even in Zambia, you have Lozi speakers. Lozi is the equivalent of Sesotho. Sesotho programs can also be looked at in those kinds of markets. But I'm sure we can also find other synergies. Even Swahili is not too far removed from the African language, South African languages, and we can look at that kind of content. So I believe digitization will definitely give us a platform to deal with that. The third issue, in relation to the relationship between the broadcaster and the executive authority, I believe the challenge with regards to that relationship is one that is not unique to South Africa. It is an issue that arises throughout the world. Now, for me personally, this would not be the first time that I would have to deal with the balancing act between the national interest and what would be perceived as the executive authority's role in relation to the national interest. Because I believe we start from the same premise. Whether you are sitting on a board of an entity or you are sitting as an executive authority, meaning you are sitting as a minister or a director general in a department, your intention is the same. You want to protect the national interest. At ICASA, as the regulator, we've had many instances where there is that kind of perception that there is direct interference or indirect interference. And I believe we've always been able to navigate it quite easily, because we fully understand that at the end of the day, there's one common goal: what is best for South Africans, which is what is the national interest. But in the context of SABC, I believe that the legislator has gone a step further to make sure that the relationship is properly regulated. There's a shareholder compact that speaks to how that relationship needs to be regulated. And I believe that if parties understand the contents of the shareholder compact, how it needs to be applied, and when it needs to be applied, that harmonizes the relationship. And don't forget, when I was DG, I obviously had to navigate that specific territory with the board of the SABC, with the executive of the SABC, and we fully understood the roles of engagement, and then I had a full understanding as to what is expected of the different parties in that particular relationship. And I think if there's that clear understanding, then that makes it makes it easier for the parties to fully govern that the relationship between themselves.
Yeah, Chair, maybe just one flog. I think there's a thin line there. I just want to understand, in case you are appointed or previously, in going forward, could that be a difficulty for you to manage properly?
I don't believe it would be something that would be difficult for me. That's why I gave the ICASA example. We navigated that territory quite effectively. Let me maybe step back. At ICASA, I was in that very same situation. We navigated that particular situation quite easily. And if you recall, at some point with regard to ICASA, when it was still IBA and it was it TRASA? SATRA. Thank you. SATRA. Before it was merged into ICASA. I don't know if that's giving it up. Before it was merged into ICASA, there was all those challenges with regard to the relationship between the regulator and the minister. But when we came in, and at the time Mandalanga was the chairperson, we were able to properly navigate that territory. So that was as a collective. But me alone, even when I became pension fund adjudicator, obviously the office of the pension fund adjudicator is also legally an independent office that should not have interference from the minister. The previous adjudicator prior to my being appointed had a very acrimonious relationship with Minister Manuel. But when I was appointed as pension funds adjudicator, I was able to fully navigate that territory with no challenges in relation to that. So if I was to be given that opportunity, I do not believe that it would be something difficult. It would be something that I'd be able to navigate. And I believe my experience also bears credence to the fact that I have in the past been able to navigate that territory.
Just one small thing, Chair, because I think it's interesting what...
I'm donating my 4 minutes to do the honourable. No, that's on a lighter note, Chairperson. No, I'll just take 1 minute, Chairperson, with regards to the Broadcasting Amendment Bill. Can you just give us an insight on your sentiments in terms of that bill, and also how it's going to affect the SABC? But also you've elaborated in terms of ways that you think that the income can be generated in terms of expanded in terms of the SABC. Can you give us an indication of what do you think of the current funding model, and how do you see it being improved, if you have any other suggestions? Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. I think in answering the last question, I'll be answering the other two questions. I think the issue of the funding model for the SABC has been somewhat of a challenge over the years, because I believe at the inception of the Broadcasting Act, it was always anticipated that the commercial service would fund the public service. But now the whole landscape in the commercial context has completely changed. There are new competitors that are in the landscape that were not anticipated previously. The whole international market has now changed, and it's been digitized. Now, I believe that there needs to be a gradual change and a paradigm shift. Firstly, we need to strengthen the commercial model, because I do not believe that the commercial model or the commercial part of the SABC business is functioning to its optimal. Then with regard to the public service, I think we also need to now start thinking of the public offering from a commercial perspective. Now, let me just maybe go back and deal with the first part. With regard to the commercial model, Digital platforms, I think, need to be fully optimized. I've seen that in the business plan, they attempt to work on the website. They've now got a Facebook page, they've got Twitter, and I believe with the Twitter page, they've got over a million followers on Twitter. But I still believe that those can fully be optimized and need to be optimized properly. Now, with regards to advertising, and I won't repeat myself because I've spoken about the digital platforms, I think SABC needs to look at it as its approach to advertising, both on their TV offering and on their radio offering. And I believe with regard to their radio offering, when you look at the public broadcasting platform, you find that the African language stations have surpassed anybody's expectation with regard to the numbers that they attract. They attract 4 million, 5 million. I mean, when you look at Umhlobo, Ukhozi, you look at Thobela, we're talking 4 million, 5 million, 3 million. I mean, that's a substantial portion of the market. And I believe that you can have an element of commercialization there without necessarily sacrificing the language content or the content from a South African perspective. Because you've got the listeners, you need to now come up with better models to attract advertisers. Some of these stations are regional in their presence. What prevents the SABCs from saying, if you're an SMME in that area, we'll give you a package that is much lower than what you'd expect for your commercial players. So as to attract SMMEs into that space, because the revenue may initially seem small, but in the long term, I believe it will accumulate because you are now trying to also not only increase local content, but also take revenue from those particular from those particular communities so that you can enhance the value of your offering. So I think from an advertising point of view, there needs to be some real looking into whether they're responsive to the market and what offerings they can put in place to deal with the offerings to the market. The other thing that I believe is critical, obviously I've spoken to the issue of the must carry regulations. I won't repeat that. But we need to also look at what is happening in the bigger market. I've looked at what the BBC has done and what the Americans have done. The Americans looked at young people, children. They looked at content for young people. They've taken Nickelodeon, they took the Disney Channel, they've sent it all over the world. They've even customized it to local needs. In fact, more children in this country watch more of your Disney Channel as opposed to, I believe once there was a Dagalani Sesame, I'm not sure, I'm not completely up to speed with regard to children's programs. But our children don't want to see that anymore. They want something that speaks to them and that is real and that is palatable. SABC needs to look at that. What content are we producing for children? And you captivate the child, you've now got an adult, because from childhood right through to adulthood, if you are giving them content that is palatable to them, they will follow you right through. So we need to get that kind of content out. And I believe the British have directly reacted to the Americans in this, in that there's now they produce quite a lot of content for young people. In fact, I think there was an outcry a few months ago where South African parents were saying their children are now speaking with an English accent. I just can't remember what that program was. But that just goes to show you that the British have directly responded to that. So SABC needs to respond to that from a South African content, from a South African local languages content. Because clearly, the parents are listening to Ukhozi and Mhlobo. Why are the children watching Disney? There's a disjointer there. And that's why you also find our children actually cannot speak South African languages. They end up speaking only English. Because there's that gap in between. So you need to start now looking for content that is palatable, where the cartoons also look as pretty and as glossy and glamorous, but speak Sesotho, isiZulu, Xhosa, and all such other languages. So that's the first thing. The second thing that the British looked at is they looked at game shows. I'm sure you've watched the program Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? There's now a Who Wants to Be a Millionaire Uganda, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire Nigeria. Why are we not coming up with such programs in South Africa? And I think we also need to also look at indigenous games. Lots of books have been written about it. How do we now commercialize those? And then once we've commercialized them, you then export them to Africa, to the diaspora. I mean, in the Caribbean, they all love Generation. But let's get them game shows. Let's give them other content that they need. And I believe South Africa and the SABC are critical catalysts for that. And what we did get the revenue in foreign currency. We're not even talking rands, we're talking revenue in foreign currency. So the game shows, I think, is something that we need to closely look at. Then obviously they've got their branded shows in the U.S. like Top Gear and Sherlock Holmes, those kinds of programs. I believe we have our generations, we have Uzalo, we've got Scheme Sum. Those kinds of programs also need to then be exported to other markets. And I believe that would be a good source of revenue. And obviously the amendments obviously talk to the funding model and the need to obviously look at a better funding model. And I think that those are the interventions that could obviously be made sure that if we look at those interventions, it's crystallized with regard to the amendment bill so that we can be clear as to what would then happen to the funding model going forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Sadie, I'm told we are over our limits.
Yeah. Miss Mhlala Mlaudzi, the SABC is ultimately accountable and responsible to the shareholder. But more often, when the shareholder intervenes, informed by the provision, the shareholder is accused of interference. In most instances, realizing that the SABC is now deviating from the mandate. If appointed a board member, how best can you advise to ensure that these criticisms that are always leveled towards the shareholder are minimized? The second one is this debate around the role of the executive directors, the role of the executive directors in the board. This debate that we might need to review this role. Some are saying there is a player and a referee kind of a setup. What's your take on that one? The last one is the role of the SABC with regard to the 8th of May. What do you understand to be the role of the SABC? Thanks. And I'll appreciate it. You can just be very brief. Yeah, I'll appreciate it.
I'll try to be less passionate. Okay. Okay. Just on the ICASA role, they give the political broadcasting slots. They did define which political party will get what coverage in relation to the advertisements that they can air through the broadcaster. And obviously the broadcaster then comes up with the schedule and times as to when that must be done, and those would be aired up until 48 hours before the elections. So that would be the role of the SABC. ICASA obviously will determine the timelines, and then SABC will be implementing through its different platforms in relation to that. The issue around the executive directors being players and referees, I'm not too sure I fully understand, I follow the argument, because my understanding is that they are executive directors, they're articles of association, they're governed by the Companies Act, and it's clear as to what their roles are. And I assume you're talking about the GC's CEO and the COO and the CFO, that they sit on the board and they're also expected to implement. I assume that's where you are. That's where the question comes. But I don't believe that is in any way unique from other companies. The company laws allow for that kind of interaction. The issue is they do not have a majority presence on the board. Their majority are the non-executive directors that would then act as a buffer in relation to whether decisions would be fair and in the best interest of the corporation. So I believe that is how that specific issue would be mitigated. The issue around the shareholder, specifically the role of the minister vis-a-vis the public broadcaster. As I've already indicated, there is a shareholders' compact that speaks to the relationship between the public broadcaster and the minister. But I also understand that it is really, there is situations where it's a fine line, and I'll give you a specific situation. When SABC does not have money, or there are challenges with regard to money, they cannot approach the Minister of Finance directly. They have to go through the Minister of Communications, who then goes with them to the Minister of Finance to say, they presented a bankable business plan, are you willing to give them the guarantees? So that relationship, you cannot completely say there is no relationship between the two. There are elements whereby there needs to be that joint working together. And as I indicated, at the time when I was GG, there was those situations where we had to work with the SABC board for the advancement of the SABC. And I always believe what is critical, what should guide any situation in relation to the interaction between the minister and the board is the national interest. Because at the end of the day, that is what we need to achieve. It's for the betterment of all South Africans. And there is no way it can ever be argued that there can not be a relationship between the SABC and the minister. There are many instances where there will be a concurrence of that relationship. But I believe the shareholder compact then explains how that relationship should then be engaged in and how they must interact with each other. But there will be a need for an interaction. And I believe there will be instances where it's a fine line. But the shareholder compact takes care of that. And I believe the practicalities of the situation also dictate that. Because at the end of the day, there is an amount from the fiscus that does go to the SABC. And who is responsible for amounts that come from the fiscus? It's the executive authority and it's the legislator. So in that context, there will be that interaction.
Thank you very much. Honorable K. I'm told you are next. After that, it's Honorable Van Dijk, Honorable Machoba, and Honorable Flos.
The candidate is very long-winded. She goes on for very long. So I think you must guide her and us at the same time. So sometimes you think it's us who are taking time, but actually the candidates, they go on and on and on without you saying, hey, you have a minute or 2 minutes to respond, so that there's effectiveness in dealing with a variety of issues.
No, Chair, mine is just one question, Mamdu. If just because I'm completely convinced you understand the sector, and you have been there in any case, it's not a coincidence. You have dealt, you have formulated these policies as part of contributing to the Act. And I can see how you articulate the relationship, which sometimes became a problem, a contestation, shareholder, the board. But my question, in your experience, what makes SABC boards to disintegrate within 2 to 3 years after appointment? What makes them? Because if you follow the history of SABC board, I hear what you're saying. You have been there. At one time you were a DG. What makes them to disintegrate and Parliament have to intervene even now? It's the same situation. That's why we are conducting these interviews. So I think if you can help us on that with your experience, because I think we must reach a point where we get to what actually is the problem when you put people into the board, because you have articulated all others.
Yes, madam. The appeal is that you try to be to your point.
Okay. Thank you very much. Chair, with that question, it becomes a bit difficult for me, being an attorney, to answer that question, lest I find myself on the other side of a lawsuit, because it would require that I give my personal opinion with regard to the way in which people have conducted themselves, and I have limited information because the information I have is only what I have read in the media. So I cannot venture an opinion on that without having full information in order to give an informed opinion with regard to the matter. But having said that, I can just maybe briefly say that I believe there's a lot of competing interests. When people get onto that board, there's a lot of competing interests. And in trying to make sure that you fulfill whatever different mandates that you have, you then find that you differ quite greatly. And as a consequence of that, I would think that is why people then end up leaving that board, because they feel that maybe they cannot continue to carry the mandate that they would have initially started off with. So I do believe that that would be it. That would be the main contributing factor.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Sunday.
Chair, I only have one question. You are representing Danny Yordan, the head of the South African Football Association, in a rape case against him. Will you still be acting on his behalf should you be appointed as a board member? Or will it be, in your view, a conflict of interest given that SAFA is a SABC supplier?
Briefly, no, I will not continue because I understand the issues around SAFA and the SABC and the sports rights. No, I will not continue.
Honorable Machoba.
Thank you, Chair. Welcome, my sister, to the portfolio committee. According to your qualification and to your experience and skills as well, I think you have eligibility to be here or to be a member of board. But I want to know two things from you. If you were selected as a board, what unique expertise and skill do you believe you will bring to the SABC? Because SABC challenges are well known. I don't have to go through diagnostic phase. I just want to know what skills you will bring to SABC. That is my first question. The second question, there's been a crisis of finding more debt at SABC for a long time. Do you think the current model is suitable? If not, why? What should be the right model for SABC? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Thank you very much. The unique skills that I think I bring to the table, I believe that I have extensive experience in the sector. I have been working in this sector in one capacity or another since 1998. So as soon as I finished my articles and started my practice as an attorney, the ICTs have been what I've been grappling with, from legislative drafting to being a regulator to being a policymaker to being a policy implementer and to dealing with all the state-owned entities that fall under the portfolio of the Department of Communication. So I have worn many different hats, and I think that would help me to actually be able to navigate this very difficult territory called the SABC, because I think, as the other members have already alluded, the boards do not stand the test of time. And I believe because I have sat in so many different capacities within the sector, it will help me to draw from that experience to be able to stand the test of time if I'm given this opportunity. So I believe that is the unique value proposition that I bring to the table. But over and above that, if a person was just to look at the strict prescript of the Act, the Broadcasting Act, it does say under Section 13, for what are the requirements for a member of the board of the SABC, and I believe I meet those requirements. Specifically, it talks about the cross-pollination of skills and expertise. I believe that I meet more than three of the categories there. I've got experience as a media in media law. I've got experience in relation to dealing with digital spectrum allocation. I've also been a regulator. So I believe that from that context, from the requirements of A, I meet those requirements. B also says that you must be a person who believes in fairness, freedom of expression, accountability, from accountability from persons in positions of authority. I believe my history and my entire career in the public service bears credence to the fact that I possess those qualities, and I've always aspired to those qualities. Even the profession that I belong to as an attorney aspires to those qualities. But thirdly and most importantly, it also states that you must have, you must represent a broad spectrum of the population. You will see that I have been nominated by the House of Royalty. And it's not a coincidence that my nomination comes from the House of Royalty. You will note that it's the royal houses from across the length and breadth of this country. And I, even in my capacity as an attorney, have represented those particular groups. I know there's been, obviously, in the media, there's been a lot of publicity about representing Dr. Denny Jordan. But in other spheres, I have represented traditional leaders across the length and breadth of this country from a perspective of actually helping the community and giving back to the community. And I've helped them in various legal aspects. I won't go into the detail, Chair, not unless you want me to, because in the interest of time. But that is why they actually nominated me for this position, because they believe that I espouse those values, that you need to not only appeal to certain sectors of the population, but your thinking and your ethos must spread across the needs of both rural and urban communities, both traditional and your modern communities in this country. And then the model for funding, I think I have spoken to the model, but I will just briefly indicate that I believe that the model with regard to the commercial broadcasting service that's provided by SABC, that needs to really be revved up and pumped up and made more competitive, especially in light of international developments, and we must look at international best practice and learn from that international best practice. With regard to the public broadcasting service offering by the SABC, I think we need to start now looking at what aspects of it can we infuse a commercial element so that we actually make it more viable, so that it's not a situation where commercial subsidizes or funds the public arm of the public broadcaster, but both arms of the mandate of the public broadcaster can stand independently and be viable and sustainable from a commercial point of view.
Because I don't see who those so I'm taking one of the minutes. Chair,
my honourable member, but we still have to give a limited time. But go ahead with your question.
I'm sorry, Chair. I will request the just you must not exceed to 20 words when you answer my question. I think, do you support the retrenchment of the SABC? If no, what is the best approach to keep our workers so that we cannot or we should not have the crisis in SABC? Thank you, Chair. I close my chapter now.
Chair.
Okay. My head.
No, I do not support the retrenchment of the workers. I followed that story very with a saddened heart that so many South Africans could be out of employment. So I do not categorically support that under any circumstances. And I believe the solution is to make the business more viable. You need to look at the commercial broadcasting part of the business, make it more viable, make sure you get more revenue into it. You need to look at the public broadcasting aspect of the service, make it more efficient, and make it self-sustaining. Let it generate revenue. But you do not compromise the public broadcasting element of the business. And I believe you can get a happy hybrid because we've seen it done in other countries. So I believe that the solution lies in having a more efficient business and making SABC function like an efficient business. And over and above that, use technology. Reskill your workers. Make sure they assimilate properly the age of technology and use digital platforms. And I believe then you can optimize the value that you get from the employees.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Other members have gone to vote, but they are coming back so that we finish off with this candidate. Madam, I'll ask you that you remain here. I don't think they'll take more than 10 minutes. There was one, Ndlozi. He had not asked any question. So, please, if you can get a cup of tea or coffee. I'm not going to give him more time, but when he comes to the committee,